This is Mary Mortland reading the Decatur Herald for Thursday, June 25, 2015. We'll begin with some obituaries. Wesley Campbell, 63, of Decatur, passed away on Thursday, June 18, at Symphony of Decatur. Funeral service will be held 1 o'clock Friday, June 26, at Walker Funeral Service. Visitation 1 hour before service. Funeral Service is in charge of the arrangements. James William Cheshire, 66, of Decatur, passed away in his home and went to be with the Lord on Friday, June 19. Services celebrating the life of James Cheshire will be 10 a.m. Saturday, June 27 at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 9 to 10 a.m. Saturday before the service at the funeral home. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Cancer Care of Illinois or Leukemia Research Foundation. Nathaniel Hill Gwynn, 93, passed away Monday, June 15, at his daughter's residence from complications due to stroke and skin cancers. Visitation will be 3 p.m. Friday, June 26, with a service at 4 p.m. at Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home, 2827 North Oakland Avenue, Decatur. Interment will follow at Saragoto Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the daughters, who, upon their father's wishes, will be distributed evenly to Hospice of Marion County, the American Heart Association, the Veterans Administration, and the Cancer Organization. Jesse Orville Ingram, Jr., 70, of Decatur, passed away Monday, June 22, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Services to celebrate Jesse's life will be 3 p.m. Saturday, June 27, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 1 to 3 p.m. prior to the services at the funeral home. Private family burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to Salem Baptist Church. Richard O'Brien Jones, 28, of Decatur, formerly of Springfield, passed away on Sunday, June 21st. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Bish & Son Funeral Home, 505 East Allen Street, Springfield. The family will receive guests at the funeral home on Saturday, June 27th from 2 p.m. until the time of funeral service at 4 p.m. Cremation rites will be accorded at a later date. Dolores M. Noss, 84, of Decatur, passed away at 8:55 a.m. Sunday, June 21st, in McKinley Court Nursing Home. A service to celebrate Dolores's life will be held graveside at 11:30 a.m. Saturday, June 27th, in the Oak Grove Baptist Church Cemetery, Bethany, Illinois, with Pastor Ron Howerton officiating. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation beginning at 10:30 a.m. Saturday morning in the Oak Grove Baptist Church until service time. Beulah Lacey, 97, of Sullivan, died 1:45 p.m. Monday, June 15, at the Sullivan Health Care and Rehabilitation Center. Funeral service will be 10:30 a.m. Saturday at the Reed Funeral Home. Burial will be in the Green Hill Cemetery. Visitation will be 1 hour before the funeral. Memorials are suggested to the Moultrie County Chapter of the American Cancer Society or the donor's choice. Jean Parker, 86, of Monticello, passed away on June 22 at her home. Funeral service will be at 2 p.m. Thursday, June 25 at the Mackie Wright Funeral Home. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service. Interment will be in Monticello Township Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the Alzheimer's Association. Edna Taylor, 69, of Decatur, passed away Saturday, June 20 in Decatur Memorial Hospital with her family at her side. Homegoing services to celebrate Edna's life will be 11 a.m. Saturday, June 27, in the New Salem Baptist Church, 352 West Wood Street, Decatur. Visitation will be on Friday, June 26, from 5 to 7 p.m. in the New Salem Baptist Church. Interment will be at the Macon County Memorial Park Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to the New Salem Baptist Church. We're returning to some editorials. The South shows its dignity. Lots of folks expected us to do something strange and break out in a riot. Well, they just don't know us, said Reverend Norvell Goff, told the packed multiracial congregation of Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston, South Carolina, on Sunday. It was the first service since the horrific slaughter of 9 innocent souls by a racist fanatic. Not being a Christian, I can only marvel at the dignity and courage of the victim's relatives who forgave the shooter. If I could ever manage such a thing, it would probably take me decades. It took them little more than a day. Less shocking, but almost as uplifting, was the conduct of the broader Charleston community, which had been unified and dignified despite the expectations of some in the media, and the accused gunman who had singled out Charleston because of its success at racial integration. And this points to Goff being right, not just about Charleston, but about the South in general. There are few subjects that ignite more casual, uninformed bigotry and condescension from elites than in this nation than Dixie. The Washington Post's Sally Jenkins glibly asserts that the Confederate battle flag is an American swastika, the relic of traitors and totalitarians, symbol of a brutal regime, not a republic. If it were left to me, I would take the flag down for the reason South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley laid out Monday. But this kind of cheap moral preening is galling. Is it really too much for people to muster the moral imagination that the issue isn't nearly as simple as that? A November poll of South Carolinians found that 61% of blacks wanted it down. That means nearly 4 in 10 blacks felt differently. And it's a sure bet that some of the white South Carolinians attending services at Emmanuel AME Church also support keeping the flag. That doesn't mean they're right, but they surely aren't the American SS of Jenkins' imagination either. Blogger Glenn Reynolds noted that when the South was solidly Democratic, we got Gone with the Wind nostalgia. Now that it is profoundly less racist, but also less useful to Democrats, it's the enemy of all that is decent and good. If we're going to offer ridiculous flag comparisons, a better one would be the Japanese Imperial flag. After World War II, the U.S. banned it until 1949. Douglas MacArthur then opted to let a defeated, once authoritarian society keep a few symbols of its past in order to build a better future. Can anyone argue that the South hasn't done likewise? White Northern liberals explain how the South is an irredeemable cesspool of hate, while ignoring the fact that blacks are abandoning the northern blue states in huge numbers to move to the South. Demographer Joel Kotkin found that 13 of the 15 best cities in the country for African Americans to live in are now in the South. Over the last decade, millions of African Americans have been reversing the great migration of a century ago to live in Dixie. Whenever conservatives complain that blacks vote monolithically Democratic, liberals are quick to argue that this is a rational decision given the realities of the black community. Surely the same thing holds when they vote with their feet? No, the South isn't perfect, name a region that is, but it does have good manners, which is why it routinely acts with more dignity and in Charleston with more grace than its critics to the North. Marnie Jameson, The Highs and Lows of House Hunting. I knew the minute we didn't get the house, it was the one I wanted. I hadn't been this heartsick since I got sent home from summer camp with Mono. After helping DC shop for a new home for months, a home he made no secret of saying he could be ours if our stars stayed aligned, but we had a good sense of what we were looking for and weren't. Like much of life, the house hunting process turned out to be a string of butterfly-high hopes followed by canyons of disappointment. Houses with so much promise online turned out to have fatal flaws, literally. One was next to a cemetery. It's a really quiet, DC pointed out. On one of our weekly house hunting escapades / therapy sessions, our agent Wendy drove us by a sunny-colored Mediterranean-style house that had once come on the market. I craned my neck so hard as we drove past, my head almost came unscrewed. The house oozed charm. What's more, all the houses on the street were equally delightful. Wendy made an appointment for us to see the house that Sunday. I arrived before D.C. The listing agent was there and had opened the home to show other buyers, too. As I walked through the door, a warm, fluttery sensation started at the bottom of my stomach and branched up like an electric tree through the tips of my ears. I later deconstructed this gestalt to be a cocktail of the warm, butter-colored walls, dark hardwood floors, substantial plantation shutters, 10-foot ceilings, crown moldings, wrought iron balusters, granite counters, and harmonious marriage of exterior and interior architecture. Whoever had chosen the finishes had a sure hand, good taste, and knew better than to take a shortcut. By the time I walked through the kitchen and great room to the enclosed brick courtyard out back, where a fountain was playing water, my knees could barely hold. Just then D.C. walked in. "What do you think?" he asked. My eyes turned into twin Ferris wheels. Then I put a finger to my lips. Another buyer was walking through the house with her agent, and I didn't want to tip our hand. Outside on the sidewalk, we huddled with Wendy and within minutes told her to submit an offer. I was giddy on his behalf and hypothetically on mine. That night, Wendy called. The house sold. Sold? Before I could submit the offer, she said. What? How? Apparently, the other buyer was there, called her husband after we left, and before Wendy had a chance to write up and submit DC's offer, they swooped in with an offer the sellers accepted on the spot. "Will they take a backup offer?" I asked, groveling. "No," said Wendy. "The deal was solid. Full price and all cash." Tears welled. My heart fell 15 floors. I tried giving myself a meant-to-be pep talk, which didn't work. They never do. "Houses are like buses," DC said, consoling me as I mopped a pond of tears. "Another one always comes along." "But that's the bus you want." 2 days later, Wendy called. The cash deal had fallen apart. The selling agent wanted to know if DC was still interested in the happy yellow house. By that evening, we had a deal. "One of the most exciting parts of my job is when I see those lights click on," said Rhonda Duffy, an Atlanta-based broker and Georgia's top selling agent for the past 10 years, about the moment buyers know. Having just experienced one of those "this is the house" moments, I was fascinated by how home buyers can make such a life-altering decision in minutes. 88% of buyers know within the first 5 minutes, said Duffy, who has sold 17,000 homes. Think about that. So has seen that phenomenon often. Buyers have a vision of what they want to live in. They can't always articulate it, but they have a picture, a combination of where they've lived and their experiences. You knew instantly because you had done your homework and had a vision. When you saw what you'd been looking for, you could pull the trigger. If you want to experience that knowing feeling next time you're looking for a house, do your homework, said Duffy. First, make a wish list. Write up a list of what you want. Beyond price range, location, and a number of bedrooms, include must-haves and would-be-nice-to-haves. Topping the list might be plenty of space between you and the neighbors, a gourmet kitchen, or a front porch. Start online, but surf with caution, warns Duffy. Seeing pictures of a house online is great, but you miss what the neighborhood looks like. Online looking doesn't replace being there, and you risk ruling out a gem because it didn't photograph well. Get on the same page. Usually buyers are couples. Both partners need to merge their visions. This gets interesting, she said. Talk about your wish list, look at pictures together, and create one vision. Look for massive value. Massive value doesn't come with price, Duffy said, and is different for every buyer. The couple selling the home who we bought had 3 young boys. They valued more space indoors and out. I value high-end amenities and walkability to restaurants, theaters, and shops. Rate houses from 1 to 10. If it's a 7 or higher, check out the neighborhood. See next week's column. Eliminate any house under 7. Typically, your front runners will have the top 2 or 3 wants on your wish list, but not all. Be ready to buy. Inventory across the country is tight right now, said Duffy. Thus, good houses priced well go fast, as I experienced. When the right house comes on the market, if you're still puzzling out what you want, someone else will beat you, and you may not want to wait for the next bus. Social Security. June marks the beginning of 2 busy seasons, summer and wedding season. With joyful expectation, many of us have already marked our calendars and started wrapping up our plans for the vacations, ceremonies, and honeymoons. While brides and grooms work out the details, Social Security wants to remind them about one detail that's extremely important: the record Social Security keeps of our life's earnings. Weddings often mean a name change is in order, and one task the happy couple should have on that to-do list is to contact Social Security. If you are legally changing your name, you need to apply for a replacement Social Security card reflecting your new name. If you're working, also tell your employer. That way, Social Security can keep track of your earnings history as you go about living your wonderful new life. If you have reported income under your former or maiden name, we might not have received an accurate W-2 and your earnings may have been recorded incorrectly. This is easier to fix now when you first change your name than years from now when you retire. So go to our website at www.socialsecurity.gov/SS number or call us at 1-800-772-1213 to find out what specific documents you need to change your name and to apply for a replacement card. After the honeymoon comes your career, moving to a new home, and a well-deserved retirement. It happens so fast. We hope somewhere in there you opened your free My Social Security account at www.socialsecurity.gov/my account. With your personal My Social Security account, you can make sure earnings record is correct and that you have the 40 total work credits you need for us to pay the benefits you've earned. Cook's Choice Goodie Basket leads to experimentation. Well, after this weekend's goodie basket from our community-supported agriculture, first I had to admit failure, then I had to go on a hunt. The failure was that even at my age and all the gardens I've seen, I don't think I've ever seen garlic scapes. But there in the basket was the bundle of long, thin ropes, looking something like fat cooked spaghetti, in which a tiny blurb had been added. For whatever reason, I didn't smell them, or the scent didn't develop until after I bagged them, and they'd been refrigerated, so I had to ask our provider. Garlic scapes, said Cheyenne Martson, try to keep them in greens, she suggested, and having learned to appreciate greens more since our recent trip south, I took her advice. So early in the week I got out those kitchen shears and went at it, chopping Swiss chard and garlic scapes to saute in a bit of virgin olive oil, another experiment turning out well. Marston provided us with recipes to use kohlrabi, also in the basket. For me, it was another opportunity to use something I'd seen but truly never added to a recipe. So that's where the hunt came in, a hunt to find out more about these relatively unattractive, certainly unusual-looking veggie. Turns out the descriptions vary. Some say it's kind of similar to a cross in texture and taste between cabbage and broccoli stems. Raw, to me, it tastes more like a turnip does after the turnip is cooked. I don't think turnips have much of a strong flavor then, but it is a member of the same family as nutrient-dense cabbages, kales, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, and cauliflower. So it stands to reason I would like it. One thing about it that does remind me of broccoli stem is its tough outer layer, which has to be removed before using. One of the recipes I found suggested dicing it, after removing tough outer skin, to then saute it in some olive oil, adding chopped onion when the kohlrabi is tender crisp. Then it can be used to combine with rice cooked in white wine and chicken broth, to which the chopped greens can be added. Everyday Cheapskate. Readers offer endless tips and tricks. Vitamins for nails. Several years ago, my fingernails were in very bad condition, and a friend suggested taking flaxseed oil capsules. Within months, my nails were beautiful and in great condition and have remained that way. I take one 1,000 milligram capsule a day, VG of Iowa. Fridge tubs. I love to reuse the single-serve side plastic dishes from Kentucky Fried Chicken to store small portions of pet food or leftovers. They come with tight-fitting lid and both are top rack dishwasher safe. Even better, they're free. Melanie, email. Dog hair cleanup. The best way I know to remove dog hair from chairs, sofas, and so forth is with a pumice stone. I learned this from a car dealer and it works like a charm. Just rub the stone toward you and the hairballs right up in seconds. I find pumice stones at my local dollar store. Christina, email. Crusher rock. Find a smooth river rock that is somewhat flat, about the size of your palm. Look for one that is comfortable and not too heavy in the hand. When you first pick the rock, run it through the dishwasher a few times, and it's ready to use to crush garlic. If you don't have a dishwasher, just wash it in hot soapy water with a bit of bleach. To crush garlic, hold the rock and smash it on a clove. Pull out the skin, and there you have it, crushed garlic ready to cook with. Cleaning the rock is a dream. Just throw it in the dishwasher utensils basket and it will last forever. Sally, Washington. once-a-day earrings. When I travel, I use a weekly pill containers for my earrings. I store one set in each day's compartment. No lost or broken parts because the earrings remain protected and intact. Martha, EC Blog. Easy grip. When installing vinyl shelf liner, there is always a little extra. I use that extra piece for opening jars. It folds easily in a drawer in the kitchen for handy use. Q, EC Blog. Passed down family history. My children thought I was nuts when I kept so many of my parents' things when they passed. But now every Christmas they get a treasured item with a little note telling about its history and about that person's life or childhood. June, EC Blog. Less pump, more soap. Save on liquid pump soap by wrapping a rubber band repeatedly around the pump part and push it down. If you push all the way down, it will only pump about one drop of soap at a time, but that's really all you need. It gives plenty of suds for washing, and you just saved a lot of soap. Norman Jean, EC Blog. Shake up the nuts. I love Blue Diamond nuts, although I find that the salt sometimes overwhelms the nuts. To get rid of some of the salt, I rub 5 or 6 nuts between my clean hands for a few seconds. After doing this a few times, I get rid of a lot of the salt. I then add plain roasted or smokehouse nuts to the flavored nuts and shake them canned to mix the nuts. Bobby, Texas. Snappy bookmark. Metal snap hair clips make great inexpensive bookmarks. You can snap the point of the tip so it points directly to the place on the page where you stopped reading, and the clips holds onto the pages without ripping them. You can buy a sheet of them at the dollar store. Raquel, Florida. Now we have a few letters to the editor. Thanks for sponsoring Symetra Tour Tourney. Unfortunately, the 2015 Decatur Forsyth Classic will likely be most remembered by local golf fans for all the rain that ultimately shortened the event to 18 holes. I know that I'll always remember the event for how hard the grounds crew, tournament staff, and volunteers worked to try and prepare the golf course to play as many holes as possible. We had countless discussions and tried to run through every possible scenario to get more golf in, but Mother Nature had other plans. I want to thank the City of Decatur, the Village of Forsyth, Tate and Lyle, the Decatur Park District, and all of the wonderful sponsors of the event for their continued support of this event. Despite only playing 18 holes, the golf that was played was still special as always. How about Jimin Kang lighting up the front nine for a 7-under 29 on Friday and closing at 8-under before being declared the winner of the event? Although the money doesn't count toward the Volvic race for the card money list, she continues to prove that she's ready for a return to the LPGA, where she previously won 2 times. I know it was disappointing to not see more golf, but we can take solace in knowing we did everything humanly possible to play more golf. Let's hope that the 2016 Decatur Forsyth Classic, the 32nd annual and longest-running event on the Symetra Tour, is the best one yet. Mike Nichols, Chief Business Officer, Symetra Tour. Dear pharmacist, B12 deficit causes of many ills. Over the past few years, there have been exploding information about epigenetics and methylation defects associated with the enzyme called methylene tetrahydrofolate reductase, MTHFR. But it's not just all about the methylation in MTHFR. There is another gene, MTRR, which encodes for an enzyme officially called 5-methyltetrahydrofolate homocysteine methyltransferase reductase. The MTRR gene provides the blueprint instructions to make an enzyme called methionine synthase reductase. When MTRR is mutated, the body may accumulate homocysteine and become deficient in methionine. Homocysteine can be a neurotoxin, and we already know it's a risk factor for cardiovascular disease. If the gene's single nucleotide polymorphism is turned on during pregnancy, it can substantially increase the risk for a child to be born with Down syndrome or neural tube defects. That was shown in a case control study published in September 2014 of Molecular Biology Reports. The risk of having a child born with Down syndrome becomes even higher if you have a methylation SNP to go with that MTRR-SNP. Genetic testing uncovers these SNPs. Today's article may sound a little familiar to those of you who have methylation problems or high homocysteine because you understand how nutrient deficiencies further cramp the pathway. One distinction, MTHFR is generally tied to reductions in natural folate, whereas MTRR is generally tied to vitamin B12 deficiency, but it isn't black and white. Medications that deplete vitamin B12 are MDRR gene busters with or without an SNP. So I want to remind you that your health is not held hostage by your SNPs. Drugs can cramp the pathway. Refer to my Drug Muggers book for the complete list of B12 drug muggers. Here are a few. Corticosteroids, antibiotics, anticonvulsants, metformin, bile acid sequestrates, gout medications, heartburn medications, alcohol consumption, and probiotic deficiency. I hear you thinking, this is complicated and can't happen to me. Let me tell you, vitamin B12 deficiencies are associated with challenging health problems, often neurological or neuromuscular in nature. Today's research does show a correlation with Down syndrome, acute childhood leukemia, pancreatic cancer, Crohn's disease, depression, anxiety, panic attacks, arrhythmias, muscle twitching or cramps, and congenital heart defects. Is it all about your genes? Heavens no. There are dozens of other factors involved with these chronic health conditions. If you're not ready to do genetic tests to identify your SNP, that's okay. My recommendation is that you talk to your holistic practitioner about supplementing with low doses of natural vitamin B12 supplements. If you have any symptoms of low B12, because it may point to SNP in the MTRR pathway. You can also consume foods that are rich in B12 and folate. Think leafy greens as well as meat, fish, dairy, or eggs, just to see how you feel. If you are a vegetarian and trying to conceive, please work at normalizing B12 before getting pregnant. Cyanocobalamin doesn't do the trick, though. Dr. Keith Roach, metformin can cause night sweats. Dear Dr. Roach, as a preventive measure for prediabetes, my doctor recommended I take 500 milligrams of metformin twice a day, morning and evening. I have been following this regimen for 2 months. The same day I started the medication, my night sweat started up again, with a vengeance. On the metformin, my quality of sleep was negatively affected by 4 to 5 episodes of bad hot flashes every night. Since hot flashes night sweats were not mentioned as a side effect, either by my doctor or the information pamphlet, I notified my doctor. He suggested stopping the metformin for 2 to 3 weeks to see if the night sweats subsided. I had immediate relief with the night sweats being eliminated the first day I stopped the medication. I am a 58-year-old female, and other than needing to lose about 20 pounds, am in good health, exercise every day, and eat a healthy diet. Some research indicates that metformin causes hypoglycemia, which then causes the night sweats. A sometimes mentioned desirable side effect is weight loss. What is your take on metformin, and whether it is a help or hindrance to good health? Answer: metformin was tested in a large trial to see whether it could help people at high risk for diabetes from developing overt diabetes, and it was successful at doing so. It wasn't quite as successful as a good diet and regular exercise, but many experts do use metformin, especially in overweight people, to help them lose weight and reduce their diabetes risk. In my opinion, it works best when combined with a healthy diet and regular exercise. However, it does have side effects. Gastrointestinal side effects, especially diarrhea, but also nausea, are the most common. Hot flashes are listed as occurring in 1 to 10% of people taking the medication, and I found many people in online support groups who also noted that hot flashes occur with metformin and stop immediately on discontinuing the medication. A few people noted that staying on the medicine for a few weeks, the hot flashes went away. This has been Mary Mortland reading the Decatur Herald and Review, Part 2, for June 25, 2015. Have a great day.